the CalCare Trust Fund, even with the $162 billion of tax increases, will be insolvent day one to the tune of at least $70 billion. And this bill would allow them to go back to the legislature in future years and raise the tax rates again and again and again to cure that insolvency.
Welcome to another NFIB California podcast. Our podcasts aim to provide a deeper look into the state issues affecting Main Street small business owners. My name is Tony Malandra, NFIB California Senior Media Manager. We're proud to have this podcast supported in part by Five Star Bank, serving customers through specialized banking solutions for entrepreneurs, business owners, and community leaders in Northern California. Each podcast invites a special guest to speak on a topic of his or her expertise. Today's guest, Assemblymember Jordan Cunningham, will discuss the hottest issue in the state capitol now, single-payer health care. Also joining us to host this podcast is NFIB California's Chief Legislative Advocate, Kevin Pedrotti, who has been working the capitol for causes and clients for 40 years. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you. Welcome to the program, Jordan. We appreciate your time today. We wanted to focus on AB 1400, single-payer health care. Lots have been said about the government-run health care system. Tell our listeners why single health care is not free health care and what employers and individuals will see by the way of taxes to fund this proposal.
Yeah, well, thanks, Kevin. I appreciate the opportunity to be on the show. You know, nothing's free, right? AB 1400 basically would take the existing health care system in California and radically transform it entirely and put it under a new bureaucracy called CalCare, which would be run by 9 appointed people and would make every substantive decision over healthcare for every person that resides in California. And that would have a number of effects. For one, it would take away everyone's choice. It would take Medicare away from everybody. It would take private insurance away from everybody. It would end TRICARE for military. It would end Medi-Cal. It would end cash for payment. In fact, all of those things would be illegal in the state of California if AB 1400 became law. You would have to be required by law by the state of California to get your medical care, your dental care, and your optometry care through the CalCare bureaucracy. So that raises a couple of interesting questions, which you alluded to. One is, how on earth is that going to be paid for? Well, the proposal that's the counterpart proposal to AB 1400 is ACA 11. And that would be it's estimated at a $162 billion set of tax increases. Income tax would go up on every family making $149,000 or more. In fact, if these tax increases were implemented, California would have the highest income tax in the country by far. We're already like number two to Connecticut or Massachusetts or something like that. We would leapfrog them. The top income tax rate would be 15.6%, which has never been done before in history. Worse than that, if you're a working class or middle class person, your payroll tax would go up on everybody making $49,000 or more. There would also be an excise tax on gross business income over $2 million a year for, quote unquote, the privilege of doing business in the state of California. Now, gross receipts tax or gross business income tax, I should note, that's a tax on your revenue. It's not a tax on your income or your profit or what you take home after you pay for your employees and for your insurance and for your building and for your equipment and everything else. So every business in California that grosses $2 million or more is going to have an additional excise tax on their gross receipts. It would take all this money. Plus, somehow they think they're going to get federal waivers and the federal government is going to let us opt out of the Medicare trust fund and give us those funds to use for CalCare. I think that's a belief that's somewhat delusional, personally. I also think it's a raw deal because we've got a lot of retired Californians. Our population's aging. We've got Californians that paid their entire working life. The minute you start working and you get a paycheck, whether it's folding clothes at a retail shop, or working at McDonald's or whatever it is, you start paying payroll taxes into the Medicare trust fund with the assurance, and this is a 55-year intergenerational commitment that America has made to seniors and to working people, that you would have that eligibility for Medicare when you retire. So we're going to, again, remove Medicare from everybody in the state of California, put them into a state bureaucracy that's untested. And I would also note, you know, a state that can't even issue unemployment checks properly. I mean, the EDD during the pandemic imploded. I mean, it just collapsed. It, you know, my office, my district office in the state assembly, for a district of about 480,000 people, we helped over 6,000 people during the pandemic get their unemployment checks processed and resolved issues for them with the EDD. Look at the total. Oh, EDD got defrauded, by the way, of $20 billion or more. We're sending unemployment checks to prison inmates because we didn't have our ducks in a row to make sure that didn't happen somehow. So that's a bureaucracy that exists basically to process checks and hand out unemployment checks to people who are eligible for that when they need that. We can't do that right. DMV has always been replete with issues. I think we're on the fifth DMV director in just the 5+ years I've been in the state assembly. They are always having problems issuing driver's licenses, getting people what they need and what they pay for as taxpayers. And then look at high-speed rail. We spent untold billions on high-speed rail. We've got almost nothing to show for it. So it's a fair question and a fair criticism in California, where we've seen these state agencies that are totally ineffective to do their basic job of serving our constituents. Do we really want a new bureaucracy that's untested, that's run by 9 appointed people, controlling every aspect of people's healthcare? I think most voters, when they learn the facts about this, will say, yeah, no thanks. There are problems with our existing system, absolutely. We need to, and we've done a lot of work to work towards more universal health insurance coverage. We're at something like 95% already, by the way. There aren't that many people left that don't have some form of health insurance coverage. But to take away people's choice, raise their taxes to the tune of $162 billion, that's just year one, by the way. And I should note, I sat on the Senate Health Committee when this bill was heard in committee. And in the committee report, they estimate that the CalCare Trust Fund, even with the $162 billion of tax increases, will be insolvent day one to the tune of at least $70 billion. And this bill would allow them to go back to the legislature in future years and raise the tax rates again and again and again to cure that insolvency. So this would just be the beginning. And I think if this bill somehow became law and ACA 11 was somehow passed by the voters, and the federal government was somehow giving us these waivers and all the money from the Medicare Trust Fund that we would need to fund this, you would see people leaving California in droves.
Well, what you've laid out here is a huge burden for small employers. And as you well know, because you're a small employer yourself, is that, you know, small employers are the backbone of the California economy. And this would be just devastating. You know, one question that we've been asked quite a bit is, why aren't the two bills running in tandem? So, you know, we have the policy bill in 14, but why isn't the ACA running at the same time so that people, you know, there's no separation between the two?
Well, that's a great question.
And you have to fund it.
Yeah, that's a great question. And the prior 5 years I've been in the assembly, we had a SB 562, the first version that the Senate passed, I believe in 2017 or 2018. It did not have a funding mechanism to pay for it. Listeners out there may be scratching their heads, and they should be. I mean, nowhere but state government in California do you even contemplate doing something that you know is going to cost an enormous amount of money without figuring out how you're going to pay that enormous amount of money to do the thing you want to do. Like, that's not how you run anything effectively. But that's essentially what the Senate did years ago. The bill was held in the Rules Committee, which I'm vice chair of, before in 2018, when AB 1400 last year was introduced. It did not have a funding mechanism. We again held it in Rules Committee. And for reasons unclear to me, it was let out over my objection. It was let out of Rules Committee with this other ACA 11 funding mechanism out there in the ether or to be introduced later. And why they haven't paired them up, I can't answer that question. I don't think it's procedurally proper. We have made efforts to try to have these two bills, the technical term I believe is conjoined, or put together. So, because you've got this giant program that would fundamentally reshape the relationship between state government and the people that live here. And you have this giant set of tax increases in this constitutional amendment, ACA 11, like, shouldn't they be debated at the same time? Like, that's just basic common sense. What the Appropriations Committee recently did is said that AB 1400 would be contingent on identifying funding. So I guess that's a partial win. But I think it is, my speculation is it's a political tactic so that the people that want to make a statement that they support single-payer healthcare to their constituents, there is a very active, vocal set of constituents that very much want this bill, can say, hey, I supported that, but then they maybe will vote a different way, or they're hoping that the funding for it in ACA 11 sort of quietly dies a couple of months later and everything just sort of settles down. But that's just my speculation, because I've asked that question in two different committees, rules and health, and I've never gotten an answer. And it makes absolutely no sense to not have the two things deliberated at the same time.
Well, I'm glad you weren't successful either. We've had a number of lobbying meetings on this bill and asked the same question and haven't really received an answer. So I'm glad it's just not us. We'll be back with more right after this with Assemblymember Jordan Cunningham.
Hi, I'm James Beckwith, President and CEO of Five Star Bank. We are excited to help bring you this series of podcasts focused on small business concerns in conjunction with the NFIB. When Five Star Bank was founded in 1999, it was business and community leaders, local entrepreneurs, who wanted to create the sort of personalized banking services they desired themselves. Services inspired by partnership and defined by shared vision and goals. A true understanding of the needs of small business owners. I know a meaningful relationship with a banker can be hard to find. At Five Star Bank, we are responsive, understand your business, and are committed to your success. We want to be a part of your growth and a valued partner supporting your vision and your dreams. You'll find direct access to a banker, complete online and mobile business banking you need to succeed. As an SBA preferred lender, let us help you with your startup business or existing business. If you're looking to make a change, please give us the opportunity to demonstrate what our personalized banking services could mean for you. I promise you individual attention from our colleagues who understand your business and are as committed to your success as you are. You can find us online at fivestarbank.com.
And we're back now with Assemblymember Jordan Cunningham. You spoke to the state almost at 100% universal coverage right now. In the governor's budget this year, he proposes allowing more people to join Medi-Cal. I mean, aren't we all almost there anyway without having to do this bill that we're talking about today?
Yeah, I mean, something near 40% of the state's on Medi-Cal already. The covered California got us farther along that path. I believe the current figure is, the estimate is 95% of Californian residents have some form of health insurance, whether that's private insurance, Medicare, Medi-Cal, TRICARE, and so forth. So what you're left with in that 5% are, you know, folks that just don't want to get it. There's, you know, that are willing to pay the federal tax essentially for not having health insurance that was instituted by the ACA. They're predominantly young and healthy people that don't, you know, just would rather pay a $300 penalty or whatever it is than go buy an insurance plan that's significantly more costly than that, although there are subsidies for that. And then, you know, a very contentious debate over the older undocumented population. And that's where the governor, I think, wants to move the needle and to say, hey, I know I said when I ran for office, I told the California Nurses Association, CNA, I would back single payer, but what I really meant is universal coverage. And here I'm going to do that in this budget. So that's sort of where he's been moving. But it'll be interesting to watch the interplay, because CNA is calling him out on that sort of, and they are putting an enormous amount of pressure on a lot of my legislative colleagues across the aisle to support single payer and threatening to withdraw endorsements. And it's going to be quite interesting to watch that dynamic play out.
Yeah, well, we saw that happen in the election with the bus, the California Nurses Association bus driving all over the state asking for single payer. And then we've seeing their activities in the Capitol on this bill as well. So it will be interesting how it ends up playing out. You know, we've spent a lot of time on healthcare here. Since we have you, I'd sure like to ask you a question, being a former prosecutor, about, you know, all of the activity that's going on with retail theft right now. You were a prosecutor. What do you see happening, and why is this happening in the state?
Well, there's a confluence of things. I think if you're looking at this objectively, you have to recognize, in my opinion, that part of this is an unintended consequence of Prop 47. I think when Prop 47 was passed by the voters, a lot of the voters did not realize that they were essentially declaring all theft, basically any form under an amount of $950, would be a misdemeanor only and not eligible for felony prosecution. So you combine that change in law, which enables, by the way, some fairly sophisticated rings of organized retail theft conspiracies, I don't know what else to call them, to go get a fleet of people to go in and take $940 worth of stuff. If they get caught, which they often don't, right? If they get caught, they get what's called a cite out misdemeanor, meaning, hey, you need to show up in court, in the Superior Court of this jurisdiction, in 3 months or so. They can't be arrested because of zero bail policies. They can't be held on bail. And so the term catch and release is used far too often, I think. But this is a catch and release system for retail theft. As long as what they take is under that $950 threshold, they can't be held on a felony. They have to be cited out by law. So we've set up a system where, you know, these sophisticated kind of conspiracies have a team of people that go in and take $900 of stuff at a time from different stores. And if they get caught, they're right back in there doing the same thing next week. So it's got to be looked at and it's got to be changed. I mean, task forces are great, and some of the stuff the governor's proposed, I'm glad there's finally a focus on it. I appreciate that. I do think it's kind of ironic that I saw an article where the governor was decrying the rise in organized retail theft in San Francisco, and he was standing in front of what's that store with the really expensive handbags?
Louis Vuitton.
Thank you. And I just chuckled because I said to my wife, I was like, well, looks like we got their attention because now they're stealing from rich people. It's like, it really, and then you get the mayor of San Francisco saying, this is BS. We've got to put a stop to this. But we have set the law between Prop 47 and zero bail policies for misdemeanors to create this massive loophole that's being exploited right now in terms of significant organized retail theft. And I think until we change that, we're going to have a problem curbing it.
And now we're having train robberies in Los Angeles, you know, trains stopped on the track, getting robbed. And
it's not a good situation. What's interesting is people want to spend a lot of money on things and they want to, you know, do these task forces and give more resources to law enforcement. And I think that's a good thing by and large, but there doesn't seem to be an appetite yet to go back and reform these legal policies that have led to the position we're in today. But hopefully that changes.
Sometime soon. Jordan, you're retiring at the end of this legislative session, and you're going to go back to San Luis Obispo to your small business. Can you tell our audience what your small business is?
Yeah, my wife and I have a law firm together. It's just the two of us. We used to have two employees. Now we have one. We do family law, criminal defense, and my wife represents school districts doing education law as well. And then we have a property management business with a massive portfolio of one commercial property building. But, you know, we're looking to maybe expand in that realm. And certainly I'm looking forward to being back home and you know, having my oar in the water a little more equally with my wife, because the legislative work has been awesome and amazing. My family's been super supportive. My wife has, of course. But, you know, it's a lot of time. And, you know, as everybody out there listening to this knows, if you run a small business, it's kind of an all hands on deck thing.
And Jordan is a father of four, very active kids.
Oh yeah, and I'm looking forward to coaching even more soccer and baseball. that's going to be a lot of fun.
We appreciate your time today. We appreciate you being a friend of small business. And we know that you've announced that you aren't going to run for re-election. So go home, enjoy your family, and go back to your small business.
Well, I appreciate that. My wife is my business partner, so I will look forward to concluding the remaining 9 or 10 months of my existing term strong. And yeah, 2023, I'll be a more fully participatory partner in our business. So that will be a good thing. But thank you for having me on. And yes, yeah. I intend to try to do whatever I can to shine a light on what I see as the massive, massive deficiencies in this single payer healthcare plan. I really do think it would be a terrible idea for the state of California and for business owners everywhere and our constituents. So hopefully we can stop it this year.
Well, we appreciate your support and we wish you luck.
Thanks a lot, Kevin.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. And thank you, Assemblymember Jordan Cunningham, for your informative insights on this podcast. Again, we'd like to thank Five Star Bank for its generous support of this and future podcasts. You can find all NFIB California's podcasts at nfib.com/ca/podcasts. You can also find our podcast on your favorite podcast app by searching NFIB California. I would also like to thank Multipoint Content Strategies for its production of this podcast. You can learn more about them at multipointstrategies.com. Why podcast for small business? It has been NFIB's educational mission for 78 years to remind policymakers that small businesses are not smaller versions of big businesses, and that a one-size-fits-all rule, regulation, or tax can do Main Street enterprises more harm than good. We hope these podcasts aid in better understanding. Finally, thank you to our listeners. If you like what you heard, please share this episode, subscribe, and give us a positive rating. We would appreciate it.